The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Miku, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We have a guest this hour who I will have to make a personal disclaimer. Is an old friend of mine. He is a Vietnam vet. He was a man who was featured prominently in our series called Shared Weight. The third hour of our story was about Woody Curry, who grew up here in the inner city of Baltimore, volunteered for the Army, pardon me, back in the early 60s, went to Vietnam as a translator. I learned the Vietnamese language, came back, and when he came back, he went through what many vets came back to go through, suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, diving into the world of drugs and alcohol. Excuse me. Was also a social activist at the same time, and then finally got a hold of his world and went to a place called The Station, and has been recovered for a long time and is now one of the leading people in the substance abuse recovery field, has been for 26 years. And since 1994, has run the innovative program at South Baltimore Station, where he has very interesting, innovative ideas about what addiction really means in the society and how to address it. And Woody Curry, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark. Nice
being here. You must be something you brought in, man. I can't stop coughing. Maybe
I hope not. I've been talking all day.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Woody, I want to start with I know that the station has a big event coming up that we'll talk about in a minute, this next week, where I will be next Thursday night. But your view of addiction, your view of what addiction means in this society is very different than most others in the addiction field. I mean, you, pardon me, folks, that's just dry throat just attacked. We'll get rid of it. I mean, you said to me once, we're talking about addiction, and people are always talking about how to get people not to shoot dope, not to snort coke, not to drink that next fifth or whatever people are drinking. And you always say that you're not going to get a man or a woman to stop their addiction because they enjoy getting high. That addiction is not, that kind of addiction is not just the issue.
Well, drug use is a symptom of addiction, okay? Drug use is what everybody sees. Alcohol is a drug, so do other kind of drugs. But drug use is the most visible symptom of addiction. Addiction is, you know, I basically tell the guys at the station, trying to illustrate what I'm saying. You've heard that story about the six blind men and the elephant?
I don't know if I have.
Well, they were given the task, you know, blind people see with their hands, some, and they were elephant placed in front of them. None of them had ever seen an elephant before, so each person touched a different part of the elephant and described it from what he felt, saying, you know, one felt his leg and wrapped his arms around and said, the elephant looks like a tree. Another one felt his side and said, no, he's more like a big wall. Another one felt his tail, say, no, he's like a small snake. Another one grabbed his trunk, say, no, he's like a big snake. In other words, what I'm saying is addiction is a much bigger picture than the part you have your hands on, you see. And because of the media, and I mean, it's obvious that drug use changes the way people think, feel, and behave. And so does alcohol, which is a drug. So with all the emphasis on the behavior, which is the drug use and the alcoholism, they miss the big picture. So the expectation is if you just stop the drug use, then you'll be okay. But it's much bigger than that. It's the whole belief system that leads you to attach yourself to things outside yourself to change the way that you feel. And so I think the country is going, was addicted to money, property, and prestige. And now that's no longer available. Everybody's in the country, from the lawmakers on down, are going through detox. I need to send all of the whole Congress and everybody that makes the laws and all the people on Wall Street to a 12-step meeting. And, you know, and I think that'll help them get their values more or less lined up. And that's what I'm going at. I think it's the value system of thinking that possession and control makes you more valuable or a better person than ordinary things. So it's like a mindset and a drive. I think it's old. I mean, it's desire. And the desire is focused on worldly material things. And when you don't have them, if you believe that's what's going to make you feel better, and it does make you feel better, but it doesn't last, then you look for things out there in the world. And drugs is a thing.
Now, this is interesting. I'm going to pick up what you just said a minute ago, because you had a guest on yesterday, Dr. Peter Weibrow. I want to give you his book, because I think you two would relate on what you're saying here. I'm going to raise some of his issues with you in a minute. But let's take a step back and let's talk about the station. I've often touted the station where you have men who have been addicted to alcohol or drugs living together in one of two firehouses where they live in dorms collectively. And it's a very unique approach to ending addiction. So talk about the philosophy that you approach these men with. I mean, I know when a man comes in, I mean, A, there's no detoxification in terms of people are not on methadone or any other kind of drug to get off of whatever drug is abusing their bodies and brains. And two, when you see when a man first comes in, he just sits there. Talk a bit about the philosophy behind the station.
A lot of it's based on some Buddhist practices, some things I picked up in my Eastern studies and practices. Just practicing being and feeling and thinking without acting on them, because those are the things that drive people to do what they do. And that's an internal process. And I don't think we take enough time out in this society to sit and be still and be quiet and just experience the process of thinking and feeling and seeing that those things are transient situations. They aren't something that's going to stay that way. They're going to change. But we chase those feelings. You know, we chase the good ones and run away from the bad ones. And those are just qualitative descriptions. They're not good or bad feelings. They're just feelings. Some are unpleasant, some are pleasant. We chase the pleasant ones, run away from the unpleasant ones. And I learned how to just observe my thoughts and my feelings and see that they don't control me. I don't have to do or follow them. You know, I can just experience them. And I learn a lot by experiencing my feelings. I learn a lot about myself, about my history. I learned that I'm the center of all of the things that I see and observe and things like that, and that I'm the one that's creating this whole show that I'm looking at. You know, I'm the author of this game that I'm observing. I put the labels on it all. I attach my feelings to certain parts of it and things like that. And it sort of centers me. It breaks my attachment to things outside in the world, more or less. I get attached to them. I mean, I engage, but I also know how to disengage. I don't think most people know how to disengage, so that's why they use the distraction of drugs and alcohol. It's a way to disengage without actually going through the process or practicing how to do that. So that's what we try to teach people at the station, to see what I'm saying, to observe, to practice what I'm saying. And then some real remarkable things start to happen. And then I don't define my residents. I call them my guys. They all are. We like a big family. I don't define them according to their disability. I think that's a mistake in looking at a human being. We do that in this society. We define people according to their disability and globalize it. This person has a disability, so he's less than or less capable. Well, they may have one thing that they can't do, but that doesn't define all the things that they can do. And when you focus on the disability, you dehumanize that individual. You take away his potential. And I don't do that. I tell the guys when they come in, there's nothing really wrong with you, that you're engaging in some behaviors that are self-destructive. And your way of looking at yourself and the world around you is kind of distorted. So I don't start treating people as if they're sick. You know, I don't enable the sickness, more or less. I expect them to do the same things and to behave and to carry themselves the same way that a normal person would. And they do.
But now, you don't enable people, but I've seen you in your work, and one of the things you do is you do confront people.
I confront the behavior.
Right, you confront the behavior.
And I confront the thinking.
And some people might look at you and go, that's awful harsh.
Well, I need to get their attention. They can handle it. They can handle drugs in the street and all that stuff. They can handle the confrontation. And they know that those guys know that I care about them. I mean, I can do things and say things like that. That's get their attention. And that's part of the culture. They can relate. You know, I mean, the drug culture is not a real nice, soft, sociable kind of lifestyle. It's harsh and it's demanding and it's confrontational and it's even violent at times, a lot of times, you know. So it's not out of their experience dealing with me. You know, I'm been there myself, so they know that. I have the credibility to do that. They know it's not a facade. It's not an act. I'm at the same level that we tend to go at each other sometimes. And that's an engagement, and that's the way we look at it. They don't get upset. They know me by now. I've been doing it for some years. Oh, everybody knows how I am, you know.
Woody Curry is our guest, Vietnam veteran who runs the station, the South Baltimore Station, which is one of the most effective drug rehab programs in our community, perhaps in the United States of America itself. Join us here with your thoughts on addiction, our society, what it means to be addicted in America. What does it mean to you to be addicted in America? We all are addicted to something. One of the things interesting we'll talk about with Woody in a moment, when the people get in there, they're not allowed to call home, talk to their girlfriend, have a cell phone, and other things, because to him, as we do this, even calling to get your girlfriend is an addiction. 410-319-8888. Join us here as we talk to Woody Curry about the nature of addiction and what it means in Baltimore. We have over at least 120,000 addicts within the metropolitan area, if not more. And that doesn't include alcohol. 410-319-8888. You don't let people make that call home, do you?
I can't stop them. What I do is cast the behavior in a different light, in a different context. Like I said earlier, I make them aware that they're using their girlfriend. They're using these things in order to feel more safe and secure. And it's only a temporary feeling. It's not going to last. Your only security is within you and your ability to adapt to change. And if you resist change, then you are caught up. Okay, so I can't stop them. I don't even want to do that. You know, I tell guys, I was at another meeting today, and I was talking to another guy in another program that had set up rules about what guys couldn't and couldn't do. I said, that's not going to work too good. I said, because there's something about human beings that telling them what they can't do is just going to give them the impetus to go out and do it. I tell guys when they come in the station, I said, look, right up the street, they're selling plenty of dope. You want to get high, you can walk out here anytime you want to.
It's like there's a drug park just two blocks away.
Yeah, you can walk right up the street and cop if you want to. I want them to know that they have that option on a daily basis, all day, every day. I can't stop you from doing that. And it's something about making people aware of their choices, that they make better choices. They don't want to be seen as being weak or susceptible to temptation and things like that. So by making the issue open and honest and above board, I'm putting the responsibility exactly. I'm not putting it there. That's where it is anyway. It's on the addict whether he's going to use or not, not on the program. I'm just making them aware at that point in time and constantly that it's a choice you make. You always have choices. Your drug use is a choice that you made. It wasn't forced on you, or it's not due to anything else, but drugs feel good. Drugs work. They give you the desired state that you want to be in, so you go out and use. Now, when you start associating it with all these other things, the message that you're saying is that these other things caused you to use drugs. No way. No way. I mean, a drug experience is very pleasurable. Certain things in life aren't. So I choose to do the pleasurable thing rather than engage the unpleasant thing. And it's the very unpleasant thing is what I need to do in order to learn and grow and evolve.
We alter our consciousness in America, as Peter Weibrow was saying yesterday on our program. We do it in all kinds of ways, whether it's buying things, being addicted. We're addicted to stuff because America's got us addicted to stuff. So we go into huge credit card debt to buy our stuff. You can be addicted to heroin or alcohol. It makes you feel good. Catch a little buzz and you're gone. So can we really, truly ever leave addiction, leave addictive behavior? Is it part of who we are in this world that's been created in America?
It's not. It's the way we're put together. I mean, that center, that little part of the brain, that little reptilian amygdala, that where the fear and security issues, the fight or flight impulse is located, is where this thing stems from. And that's just, we are hardwired to be addicts. If we go to the extreme, I look at addiction, the addiction is when it gets out of hand, when you can't manage your life, that's addiction. I mean, we're going to do things. It's just human nature to do things that make us feel good and safe and comfortable. Nobody wants to feel uncomfortable, insecure, or in pain. I mean, that's just normal. But when we constantly reinforce these pleasure-seeking behaviors to the point where we lose track of everything else in life that's of value, that's when I call it an addiction. You see, it's not, it's human nature, like I said, to want to feel good. But I have to be cognizant or aware enough to realize that it's more to life than feeling good. In fact, life isn't all about feeling good anyway. You know, the majority of mine hasn't felt good, but I've learned a lot not feeling good, but I've learned more from the negative experiences. I'm not going seeking them out now, but, you know, when they show up, I pay more attention to them. And, you know, that's the addiction, the self-destructive behavior associated with pleasure seeking, not just doing things for fun or pleasure or things like that. So my focus is more or less putting a balance in your life. The Buddhists call it the middle path. You know, I try not to go to the either extreme, either too good or too bad, or try to balance it out and, you know, do that. And when I find myself becoming very or too desirous of something, then I need to take a step back and examine what part that thing is that I'm attaching myself to plays in my life. What does it do for me? What is it in me that I need to take a look at that I'm getting from somewhere outside of myself? And usually it's a false sense of safety or security, you know, love or being in love or being infatuated, put it like that, you know, or having a lot of money or things like that. It gives you a sense of safety and security. And if you're raised to believe that, then that's the way you live your life. So you got to, you don't have to do whatever you want. I mean, that's your free will. But it's a learning process where you start seeing things more clearly. And I like the idea of freedom where I don't really need to do or have to do anything, you know, because that takes my choice away. You know, I'd much rather choose to do things rather than have to do them.
Woody Curry is our guest. We're talking about addiction in society. Talk to us about your thoughts about addiction, whether it's yourself, whether it's somebody in your family, whether you've looked to look at the world around you as an addictive place, what we do to change that, as we're doing at the station that Woody Curry runs, which has a South Baltimore station up in Utah Place, where recovering addicts go to live for 18 months.
Up to
24 months. And has one of the highest success rates of lack of recidivism of any programs that we know about. Join us at 410-319-8888. Woody is here. They raise money every year at the 17th Annual Home Run for Recovery that takes place this next April 23rd at 6:30 at the Cross Street Market. This event has a raw bar, wines, microbrews, auction items. You can call 410-752-4454 or go to baltimorestation.org. You can join us here right now at 410-319-8888. Join in on this conversation with Woody Curry. It's funny, you know, here you have something to raise money for addiction recovery, and I always thought that was funny, and with wines and microbrews.
I was getting ready to comment on it. I know there's some people out there in the recovery community that red flags go up. our guys have been stewards and work at that home run thing every year. And we never have any problems with that. They clean up. They are around mingling with the guests and everything. Everybody that's a resident of my program knows what not to do. And I trust them not to do it. And I have some amazing results. They don't do it. You know, like I said, I think people look at, they call addiction a disability. And then they define a person according to his disability, and then they treat them according to their disability, which keeps them stuck in the disability, you know. And I don't treat them that way. I don't see my guys that way. I tell them, you know, that nothing wrong with you outside of your thinking and your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And you can change that. And then we have a culture. It's almost a cultural imperative inside the station that if you're going to come in there, then you're going to adopt the behavior and the thinking of the majority of the people that's there. And so that human need to belong and be part of something takes hold. So I don't have to indoctrinate them. The guys that are already there and that have been there for a while, you're either going to join them or you're going to leave. And that's just giving people the choice as to whether they want to be part of that community or not. And most of them do. Because what I find is that this is the first time since they've engaged in any kind of treatment program where they aren't treated as if they're sick people, you see. So you get a chance to be normal. You don't have to act like an addict. You don't have to hear addict talk all day. You don't have to be warned about drugs and alcohol, which is sort of like locking the barn door after Horseman ran off.
See, here you have a master's degree in addiction counseling. You're working on other degrees. You're running this program. Mm-hmm. And you don't see addiction as an illness.
I see chemical dependency as an illness, as a brain disorder. Okay. But it says disorder. Okay. And disorder means that at one time it was in order and something happened to throw it in disorder. Okay. So what I found out with a lot of the studies and research and seminars and workshops and things that I go to, simplistically, we have over 1,000 billion brain cells. So we establish these neural network profiles through our behavior, understanding, and our attitudes, and all of that stuff is encoded, so to speak, in your brain. And the same tape plays over and over again. But then you can rewire your brain. You know, you can activate some other brain cells by doing some things different consistently and start changing your attitude and your behavior. And you set up a whole new network that sort of overrides the old one that you're working out of. Everybody lives out of memory. You know, not just addicts, human beings. We live out of memory. We recognize things. We don't see them. If it's not there in our brain prior to us looking, we wouldn't even see it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So by putting a new neural network profile that overrides the old one, which takes place over an extended period of time, you have a different memory. But the old one will always kick in. But then you have something to counterbalance it with some new behaviors and learned behaviors. I mean, it's known that if you practice certain things over a period of time, they become second nature to you. So basically, that's what we're doing at the station. I was just really excited when I attended workshops and studies with some neurobiologists and neurophysiologists and see that there's a biological basis for this stuff. Okay, rather than just some superstitious supernatural stuff, because I never believed in all of that anyway. I think that there's a rational.
Because one of the things that you do there, I'll come back to this God question in a minute, but one of the things, Woody Curry is our guest, and we'll turn on some dangerous territory here and see what you think at 410-319-8888. Woody Curry, who runs innovative program at the station, two facilities, one in South Baltimore, one in Utah Place, a recovery for addicts who are there for up to 2 years, and it's a remarkable program with one of the highest lack of recidivism rates in the community. We'll talk about why that is. Your thoughts about addiction in our community, what changes it, what we're facing, how to address it. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. There's no accident that your program is full of combat veterans, is full of veterans of the armed forces.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, 70%?
75%.
75%. The connection.
The connection?
Yeah.
Same for the addicts. I mean, they don't feel so out of place, you know? Addicts and combat veterans is a whole different group of people. We've had experiences that you can't really describe sufficiently.
And we're saying this, Woody Curry is a combat veteran, so.
And so you can't explain the sunset to a blind man. Living through horror is different than looking at it on a screen or hearing about it. It's like addiction. It's a transcendent experience. It's horrific, but it's still transcendent. It's above and beyond normal everyday life, and it's real. So how do you explain that to somebody that hasn't been there? So a lot of guys, you know, when I came back to the world, to the United States.
After the war, you're talking about? After the war in Vietnam, we're talking about?
Well, I never felt really comfortable, even as a kid, I guess. I don't know. But that was something else that changed the way I see things. And it was just hard to explain. It's hard to articulate it. It's without people looking at you like you're something inhuman. We can sit, the guys, the veterans, we can sit and talk. You remember when we went to Nam?
I do remember when we went to Nam.
You remember Bao Ninh?
The Vietnamese writer who wrote
about the war.
Right.
And then we found out that he and I were in the same area in the Central Highlands. You remember we were talking. You see how he and I got along? And he was on the other side. But we were like, we connected just like that. Why? Because of the experience itself. Different people, different races, different philosophies, opposite sides. But we had a bond. You saw that when we were sitting in the hotel room. He and I connected just like that. You know what I mean? It's the experience, the same as the experience with the drug use, that connects us, that makes us human.
We have to take a short break, and this is a good place to take a short break and come right back. Daniel, who's our first caller up, don't leave us. We're going to want to come to your call when we return as we talk with Woody Curry. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Woody Curry and our tour of addiction and our life in America, what it all really means. Stay with us. I'm Mark Steiner, reminding you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. More information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We're talking this hour with Woody Curry, who runs one of the most innovative and successful programs in this community, anywhere in the United States, for recovering addicts, where they spend 2 years and struggle with their addiction with no medication, confront themselves in very unique ways. It's a very Buddhist philosophy, but it's also a very street philosophy. And they come together in the man, Woody Curry, who has fought in a war, came back, was addicted himself, fought it, and created this unique way to confront addictions in our society way beyond the drugs that people might put in their veins or drink out of their bottles. You can join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on addiction in our society, in Baltimore, in our lives, that go way beyond the thought of drugs. What are your thoughts? And before we go back to talking about Woody and the and combat veterans, I promise our listeners we go right to him, and then we'll come right back and pick up where we left off. And Daniel in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, I really just wanted to express a profound respect that I have for Woody. My family has struggled with heroin and methadone addiction for about 20 years. It killed my father. My mother, like, still struggles. She's tried to get off methadone for, like, at least 20 years on and off. And I just really liked his kind of the Eastern philosophy approach and just a different approach. I mean, I grew up going to Narcotics Anonymous meetings ever since I can remember. And my dad worked in homes. Like, he was a counselor for many years before he finally relapsed and killed himself, like, in his 50s when he decided to shoot dope again. But I just really wanted to express, just I know that...
Take your time.
What it means.
Yeah.
Just that there's somebody that's... somebody like him that's out there, that's all.
Thank you, Daniel, for having the courage to kind of join us on the air. Appreciate it. Really do. Recovery is not an easy thing.
I know. I think it's like he was putting out there is mainly the reason why I do what I do. Because, well, you know, I hate to see. I just had a nephew that died week before last. And it's part of the same stuff, you know. And people, I was just asked by a doctor, why are you so angry? I said, man, if you saw the pain and suffering that people go through, how can you not be angry? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Especially when there are ways that can alleviate some of it. And most of the suffering and pain is self-inflicted. People grasping for something that can give them a sense of belonging or safety or comfort and security and feeling so alone and alienated and isolated. A lot of this, who was that said that we live lives of quiet desperation?
Mm-hmm.
I see it all of the time, you know. I have to, you know, I live alone now, and that's my only refuge. I just have to get out of it every now and then and go home and sit back and just relax and settle myself, you know.
And you call the place you sit in your bunker.
Yeah, it's my bunker. It's where I'm safe.
410-319-8888. Sarah in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I was listening to your comment, and I've never heard that. I was telling this man that I had two brothers and a sister. Both brothers are dead since they were on drugs, and my sister's still alive. And I never heard it put that you said something to the fact that you don't tell them that they're addicts. I mean, you changed their way of thinking. And I was also reminded that I work with people that are in the program, an addiction program, and they keep coming back and they keep coming back. Some people are able to get off. I don't know if it's family support, but it seems like what you said, it's like a bright light, so to speak, that you're giving them hope or you're allowing them to see themselves as they should be, you know.
Sarah,
I've never heard it put that way, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you called us. And what are your thoughts?
I don't like labeling people because I resisted labels all of my life. I think that's one of the ways I got.
They labeled you as soon as you got back from Vietnam as having all these disorders.
Every time I turn around, somebody had some kind of bag they wanted me to work out of, and I spent most of my life disproving everything that everybody thought. you know, my life belongs to me. I'm the one who defines what it is, not society, not somebody else, not any particular religion or philosophy or anything else. My life is mine to do what I want to do with it. You know, and I think a lot of times these labels that people put on people, whether it's a race or religion or anything else, people try to identify with something out there in the world, and it takes them somewhere outside of themselves. You know, and human beings are human beings. You can choose to believe what you want. You can choose to act whatever you do. It's not incumbent on you to be anything but other than what you want to be. And I think the choices and the control of people's lives are taken away from them early on, and they never get past that. They spend the rest of their lives looking for where they fit. Well, my thing is, I fit in the world. That's where I am. You know, wherever I go, I can more or less adapt or relate. And my experiences in Vietnam, the three times that I've been there was like, you know, this is where I am, so I got to do what they do. And I was able to do that, you know, to fit in. I mean, I looked different, but they didn't mind that. They had a good time with me, didn't they, Mark?
They did. I mean, there weren't too many black faces in Hanoi.
Yeah, well, I think I was the only one. Everybody in the neighborhood knew me, and I didn't know any of them. I walked down the street in the crowd. Hey, Bo Cop, you know, and I had them waiting outside the hotel for me in the morning. I couldn't even go out. But I'm just comfortable being who I am, whoever that is, and I'm not really hung up on that, you know. But I think that's the problem. If you have to reach outside to find something in order to be comfortable with yourself, then that is the genesis of a problem right there.
When we were in Vietnam together this trip to do our documentary series, if I was off meeting with intellectuals and other folks out there, and Woody took to the streets and went into the back alleys of the streets and hung out. Very different experience than most people have when they go to Hanoi. He didn't go to the tourist places. He went other places. 410-319-8888. Gary in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Gary.
Thank you very much for what you do. Props to you. I'm 55 years old. Had a high lottery number and also went to college, so I was classified 1H. In terms of the core subject being addiction, you know, I fight my own struggles, a lot of people do, and I'm always reminded of the collective pain that we as so-called minorities experience here in this land, whether, you know, whether it be black, Native American, et cetera. But I'm always reminded of this quote by Michelle Indeghiocello in one of her songs where she says, "My father, his liquor, the salve for the unseen wounds," and that just regularly comes to me as it pertains to addiction. So it doesn't matter if it's alcohol, barbiturates, amphetamines, narcotics, etc., food, sex, the salve for the unseen wounds, you know. And I just thought I'd throw that out there, and I'll hang up and listen to you guys some more.
Gary, thanks so much. Woody? I mean, that was a great line he used, and it is a salve, and it is more than drugs. He said, he listed a whole bunch of things that we can be addicted to.
Yeah.
Especially in the worlds of poverty and communities of color.
Well, the bigger the headache, the bigger the pill. I think the world is transforming itself. I mean, I look at this so-called economic crisis as human beings, we are going to have to redefine ourselves. We don't have to. We can continue down this road until we self-destruct.
That's right. We can do that.
We have a choice.
As a society and as a people, as individuals.
Exactly. And right. I look at this whole thing as a change in consciousness, a change in awareness, a return to basic values, if there ever were any basic values, you know. But they are human values, you know. Like caring about each other and looking out for each other and caring about the next person and your fellow man and respect and things like that. That stuff gets lost in this striving for material gain and power and control and all of that stuff. We're driving ourselves off a real deep cliff. And the pain is caused by desiring these things and not having these things. If you can break that need for these things, and that is not one easy thing. I think the pain is what drove me to the point where I just had to let it all go in terms of seeking what was already there to be had, you know, the friendship and the camaraderie and the loving and caring of other people and treating people around me the same way. It sort of gives me another sense of security in terms of I can identify with just about anybody on that level, because those are basic human qualities that we all have, you know. And living that way is a lot less threatening. It's not threatening to me at all, you know, but how do we get there? We first have to go through the pain of what everybody calls addiction to see that there's another way to go.
Because leaving addiction, even for all of us, whatever that is, even if you're not like, truly addicted and always super and high all the time, but even, you know, going to, let's say you drink four glasses of wine a night, and all of a sudden you stop. All of a sudden, a light goes on. There's this thing called clarity that hits your brain, and clarity is a frightening place to be. Clarity is scary.
I know, because clarity gives you responsibility.
Yes, clarity is afraid of
people don't want to be responsible. People like to place blame. People like to fix the blame on things, you know. And clarity is that point where you realize that choice is destiny. It's not prearranged. You are doing it. You are the whole show.
And I'm going to go to another caller here. When we come back, I want to reprobe something that's kind of a very dangerous territory, because you said you control your destiny.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pick up on that point after this next caller. 410-319-8888. Mia, you're on the air.
Peace and blessings, Mark, and also to you, Woody.
Welcome.
I'm also a student of Eastern philosophy, that of Buddhism and Hinduism. And my question is, in normal 12-step programs, and I'm not an addict, but I have a lot of questions about just the treatment of addiction. And when the statement is made that I am a alcoholic or I am an addict, when you put the I am in front of anything, you become that.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, how does your program differentiate itself from other 12-step programs? Because I heard you mention earlier that you don't attach that label to people, which I think is so powerful. And so amazing that you're not identifying them as such, whatever that may be. But how do you differentiate, and how is the process able to be made so transition from being an addiction to not being an addiction if you have such a high recidivism rate?
I don't have a high recidivism rate, first of all.
It's very low. I've said that. It was my mistake. I said it incorrectly.
A 12-step program is not a treatment program. It's a self-help program. It's a spiritual approach to this thing we call addiction, which has been with us from time immemorial. But my Eastern approach is more or less a detachment from identifying with my feelings and my thinking and the events in my life. All of those things are transitory. So I go with the flow. I don't expect any of them to be a defining thing for me. It's an experience that I'm having, and when the experience is over, then another experience arises. So I never become really attached to those things like most people do and wind up being directed and controlled by those things. I see those things as they are, imposters. I know that's kind of hard for most people here in the West to get their head around. You don't even want to get your head around it. It takes years of practice to live that way. But if I don't define people as addicts, and I'm not talking about people being addicts, I'm talking about human beings who are suffering from attachment and from chemical dependency. And how do you free yourself from that? The same way you free yourself from everything else. You let go of the desire. You let go of the need. You let go of all of that stuff. And it's a process that you have to go through. It's systematic. And I think because I have 50 guys all doing the same thing, it makes it a lot easier for people to be able to do it. They're not trying to do it by themselves. It's in Buddhist philosophy, I guess you would call it a sangha. You know, it's a community of people who are trying to break the desire. You know, I often say to my guys in street terms, it's not the trap that killed the rat, but his love of the cheese.
Is that the truth?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not the trap that killed the rat, it's the love of the cheese.
Right.
And I'm also fascinated. I think what Mia was bringing to this conversation also is that, and I've heard every Monday night you do these relapse prevention programs where you give this lecture and you tie addiction to behavior, tie addiction to theoretical physics and Buddhism and put all these ideas and wrap them up into a lesson for the week, which I think is very powerful. And the place is packed full of people who are either in the program or just coming off the street just to come listen. And you do this at the South Baltimore station at the main facility in South Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's interesting here is because you even talk to your men about not having the addiction to God. Not saying you shouldn't believe in God if you want to believe in God, but that you don't say that's what frees me from my addiction. You're saying something very different.
Oh, boy.
You're not challenging somebody's right to believe what they want to believe.
No. That's not what I do. I ask them to take a look at it. Addicts are dependent people. In fact, addicts have what they call a dependent personality disorder. And so anything that an addict can depend on to do what he needs to do needs to be looked at. I see my relationship with God, the universe, as not unilateral but bilateral. In other words, I depend on God, but God also depends on me. Now, if I don't hold up my end of the deal, why should I expect God or whatever you want to call it to hold up his end of the deal? His, her, its end of the deal. I don't like to put labels on a supreme or universal. I just had to get away from that. Of course, I have my own personal thing.
We all do.
But it's not in some form. It's just an understanding that it's all good, you know. Painful, but it's good. There's a lesson in the painful situation, and the pleasurable situation makes life enjoyable, so it's all good. And we all evolve to, like all life, evolves to a higher level of understanding, awareness, or being. And it's like that's what we do, you know, and it has to start somewhere. If it starts in pain, then that's what drives you to a higher level of awareness. And I just have this one totality. I'm just part of everything that it is. You know, I don't see myself as being separate and distinct from everything else. So it's, I don't have that fear. You know what I mean? I don't think that anything that comes my way is beyond my ability to overcome, transcend, or whatever. And the experiences in my life bear witness to that. You know, I'm not just sitting here talking. You know what I mean? I don't know what else could happen.
Woody Curry is in the house tonight. Woody Curry runs the station, one of the most successful drug rehabilitation programs in the United States. It's right here in Baltimore, out of two firehouses, the main one being in South Baltimore, with his philosophy. Came out of combat in Vietnam, addicted himself, came out of the streets of the inner city to join the army through combat, found a different way, and since 1994 has run this very innovative program at the station. Number is 410-319-8888. Let's see who's been waiting here for a while. Donna, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Donna. You're on the air.
How you doing? And I'm enjoying your guest.
Thank you.
I have a question. Everybody talks about, you know, the alcohol and the substance, you know, the actual substance addiction. But if you look around society, it seems like large percentage of the population is addicted to something. The cigarette addiction is very rampant. Food addiction, you're seeing extremely obese children, extremely obese adults, families. And, you know, and if we're going to heal from just, if we're going to heal, period, spiritually, we have to address all the addictions, you know, that is out there, the food addiction, the alcohol addiction. You know, the you see, always hear programs, the alcohol and drug addiction, but you never hear the food addiction. You know, either women are starving themselves, for example, or they're overeating, or the cigarette addiction, or, you know, et cetera. And you know, that concerns me because addiction is like, you know, a disease. It's dis-ease of the spirit. And I wanted your guests to elaborate on, because everybody focuses on, you know, you hear people say, oh, look at those drug addicts. You know, they look down on them. And I say to them, I say, wait a minute, they have a disease that needs to be addressed. And there is a way of addressing it. But, you know, people label like that group versus this group. But we as a society really need to look at the addiction across the board and give it names and stop just focus on one group that seems to be looked down on and not focus on the other addictions that are you can easily buy a hamburger, you know.
Right. And Woody, I don't think you disagree with that.
No, that's what I've been saying all along. I mean, you know... primarily, I guess basically, it is extremely unlikely or difficult that anyone is going to give up anything that they enjoy doing. That's what it boils down
right.
to, regardless of what it is. If it's a rewarding experience, people don't voluntarily stop. They want as much of it as they can get. And that's across the board, whether it's greed, drug addiction, food, sex, you name it. It is extremely difficult. It almost goes against human nature to stop doing something that's pleasurable. There it is.
Right. That is it.
That is it.
Very quick question here that came in by email. A very quick answer. Ask Woody about AccuDetox.
Oh, yeah. Well... we do it at the station.
Oh, acupuncture.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
It's AccuDetox. You put five pins in certain areas in the ear that correspond with parts of the body that remove the toxins and settle you down and give you some peace of mind and relax.
You learn that and you do it.
Yeah, we do it at the station now. We were taught and we learned and trained to do this AccuDetox. That helps with the calming and the mood swings that addicts go through. It's a period after the drug use stops called post-acute withdrawal syndrome. And those are basically withdrawal symptoms showing up after the drug use has stopped over a period of time. And the AccuDetox uses the body's natural healing endorphins to heal rather than use other drugs to do it. And it works pretty good. I mean,
maybe I should come down and just try to chill out a little bit.
It's good for that, too. You know, as soon as I can get more dexterous, I'll go home and put five pins in each one of my ears, but I can't see them as good as I
can. You can do it to other people, not to yourself.
Yeah.
Woody Curry has been here tonight. He runs the station. I want to remind you all that the 17th annual Home Run for Recovery takes place April 23rd, starting at 6:30 p.m. at Cross Street Market. This event features all-you-can-eat raw bar, selections of wines and microbrews, tons of great auction items for you to bid upon to support the station and the work that Woody Curry and others do at the station to fight addiction. You can call 410-752-4454 or go online at baltimorestation.org and join us down there. We will be down there, Valerie and I, to enjoy the evening as well and support the Baltimore station. Woody, great to see you, brother. Thank you for being here.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
Good to have you here. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. Our engineer tonight is Zachary Coleman. Interns are Christina Arison, Judith Lloyd, and Brian Boone. Theme music by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Miku, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.